And let's talk about Confucianism. I'm here to confuse you, and I want to confuse you well. Actually, you'll like Confucius. I like Confucius. Confucius and Buddha are similar in their approach. They both believed in strong ethics. They tried to convey to their people strong ethics. And when you hear about Confucius, you're going to really like him. I like him a lot. I like what he brought and some of his famous sayings. If you're into any of these Chinese films, years ago they had Charlie Chan. How many have ever seen or heard of Charlie Chan? A few. Charlie Chan, and they would always say, "The master says." The master says. And you'll find that a lot of the sayings of Confucius is "the master says," because Confucius comes from the word Kung Fu Tsa. Kung Fu Tsa anglicized came to Confucius. But it means Master Kung. And we'll talk about him in a moment. I want to share with you some of his thoughts and some of his feelings. Let's take a look at my handout. I think Kathy's giving you the handouts now, so you'll have all this. I just pulled these in. This is new. This isn't in your handout. This is actually a Confucius temple. A Confucius temple from over in, I believe this one is not in Vietnam or Cambodia. I believe it's, it might be in Cambodia. But it's a Confucius temple in ruins. Because, again, Confucius had such a powerful influence on the Chinese peoples, even more than Lao Tzu. Powerful influence. Such a powerful influence that he influenced the education of children from about the 400, actually from his day, or about the 400 BC, all the way through to 1905, when communists took over. Then the communists tried to get rid of the name of Confucius. They didn't want, he had too many good principles. He didn't want the people knowing these principles, like honesty and integrity and treat people kindly and don't have government that's oppressive, but the government needs to be for people, not against people, and so on. But this is a beautiful, I didn't have this in before. I didn't know if Confucius actually had temples, but they do. You need another one over here? I think they need some more on that one. Here's a Confucian temple in the Forbidden City of China. You've heard about the Forbidden City? And that's a Confucius temple, because Confucius was very well known in China, very well known in those early years. Here's an introduction to Confucianism. Is it a system of ethics or a religion? This is a question they have in many of the books on religion. They'll say, is this really a religion or is this a system of ethics? Well, he does acknowledge God, but like Buddha, he keeps him in the background. He acknowledges there's a force out there, but he says you need to be doing things yourself. So he's more of a self-doing type person. Confucius, do not look to the divine very much. That's why the question, is this just a guy giving us a bunch of good principles, or is this something to do with a religion? The goal is to become a Chun Tzu. A Chun Tzu, you'll see that word again, a superman, or a gentleman, or a magnanimous man, a man who applies all the other seven principles, because he has eight principles that he gives. Eight principal themes in Confucianism. The ultimate is to become a superman or a gentleman. Now, I would take it, in the end, your ultimate, we're all to become super people, right? You're going to be beyond human beings. You're going to be changed to spirit, but you were a human being. We're all to become better. We're all to become like Jesus Christ. If you're like Jesus Christ, in my mind, you're a superman or a superior man. That's the goal, to become a superior person. Family is very important. Family is very important in China and in the Orient. Remember we talked about reverence for family? Very important, the ancestors, and to be kind to people who are older and to respect them. We'll talk about relationships, which are very important to him. Respect for the aged. If somebody is old, you need to give them respect. Who knows the scripture? You don't have to tell me exactly where it is, because I'm not sure I know exactly. It's in Leviticus somewhere that talks about how you should treat the aged. Anybody think of it?
Honor the hoary head.
Yeah, honor or rise up before the hoary head. So if somebody has gray, you're supposed to stand up. There's a lady at church in the morning church. She used to be, we used to be one church in Cincinnati, and she goes to the morning church now, so I don't see her as much. But every time I see her, I say, I'm standing, because I'm always standing when I go to her. I'm standing before her, because she's all gray. And because she's all gray, and she's a widow, so lost her husband a couple years ago. So I said, I'm standing. She, oh, you know, because she's all gray. Because you're supposed to rise up before the hoary head. It means show respect to those who are older than you. So I've got some grace. You can sit sometimes and stand sometimes in my presence. Tradition is stressed. Confucius loved tradition. If there was a traditional way of doing something, that's what he loved. And perhaps that's me too. I'm a traditionalist. You know, if you're supposed to wear your hat straight, wear your hat straight. Don't wear it crooked. Don't wear it. There's a reason for wearing it crooked. Wear it crooked. I played baseball, all right? I played Little League, Pony League, Prep League baseball, and high school baseball. I wear my hat straight, except if I were going to be a catcher, then I'd wear it backwards. But I didn't wear it backwards. If I'm playing infield, the people wear it backwards. They're non-traditional, okay? I was traditional. If something's supposed to be done this way, do it that way. Why do it differently? If a car's supposed to have white walls on it, don't put black walls. Now, black walls look ugly. But when white walls on cars were the thing, to see somebody with black walls, oh, that guy's really out of sync with everything. Well, now black walls are in, so I'm into black walls. If I put white walls on my car, it just wouldn't even look nice. Okay, so tradition. Confucius loved tradition. If this is the way to do it, do it that way. Why do you want to break unless tradition is sinful and wrong? Li, very important word for him. Li, having to do with courtesy or decorum. He believed, and this was a very important part of character, that you needed to do the right thing at the right time. In other words, there's a time to really be flippant and silly and happy and giddy. But there's also a time to be serious. So if you're flippant and giddy during the time when you're supposed to be serious, that's not Li. Li is proper decorum, proper courtesy. You know, there's a time when you dress up and there's a time when you don't. You go to a formal dance and you're wearing Bermuda shorts or shorts, it really doesn't seem to fit the occasion, okay? So unless you're wearing a kilt and that's the dress for Scotland, that's a different matter. But typically, if you're going to a formal dance, you're dressing up nicely. So there's a courtesy. There's a sense of form, good form. Li, we'll talk about that a little bit more later on. But it's something, a decorum, the proper thing at the proper time. Emphasis is on doing good now. Not so much concern about the future. The emphasis is on doing good now. What can we do now? When I read to you about the type of world that Confucius entered, what had happened in his time, the way people treated each other. See, he was of a time when people were even gentlemen at war. You know, when they could be decent about killing each other. I mean, how do you get decent about killing each other? But they weren't dirty, okay? But then they started to get dirty. Then they started to take people and massacre them and punish them with excruciating punishments. We'll learn this in Minor Prophets, where God says, you stepped over the line because you burned the bones of that Moab king. I mean, the guy's dead anyway. What makes a difference? God says, you took it to an extreme. You not only killed him, you wanted to just kind of wipe him out. You wanted to turn him into powder and dust. So there's nothing left, no memory left of this man. How dare you do that? That's extreme. He talked about the nations of Assyria and others who would go through and rake people, ride them over with like thrashing instruments over people. So you just chop people up. He said, how dare you do that? I'll get you for that. So in his day, Confucius saw a lot of difficulties in the way human beings were treating each other. I'll read that to you in a moment. But there's emphasis on doing a lot of good now. Quite a contrast to Taoism. Taoism, hey, just leave me alone. I'm going to go over here and let me do my thing. And I'll be over here. I don't really care what's going on anywhere else. I just let me do my thing and get out of the way and just let it happen. And who cares about tradition? And don't be so bound from the past. While I'm talking about this, let me read to you. his encounter with, in the book I have, Confucius' encounter with Lao Tzu. While Confucius was still a young man, although already widely known for his knowledge and humanist teachings, he received reports that an old archivist in the imperial library known as Lao Tzu was expounding strange metaphysical doctrines. And Confucius was a very smart man, a very wise man. He had been trained in the six arts called Ju. He had been trained in all of them and trained well. And he became so famous, he actually became a one-man university. People came from all over, thousands of students from all over China to learn from him, and he could teach them all. And he welcomed them all to come, whether they were rich or poor. And as long as they were willing to work and study, he would work with them to the nth degree. He took questions. He loved questions. It was no problem, even disagreements, because he thought that that meant people were thinking. So he heard about this guy. He wanted to find out what was going on. So Confucius had already been disturbed by the unusual, the inscrutable, and the enigmatic. He decided to meet Lao Tzu the first chance he had and learn more about these mystical teachings. Sometime later, Confucius wished to examine certain ancient manuscripts in the imperial library. So he was going to make this trip anyway. So now, making trips back then was an arduous journey. Arduous time, difficult. And he sent word to Lao Tzu requesting an audience with him. Confucius put on his most formal and elaborate gown for the occasion. Now, he's going to meet a man who's older than he is. There's respect for the ancient. Put on his most formal and elaborate gown to go meet him. And out of politeness for his elder and in accord with tradition. But this elaborate gown seemed to annoy Lao Tzu as soon as they met. Lao Tzu was quite a few years older than Confucius. Their interview, according to the report Confucius later made to his disciples, was as enigmatic as the hostility shown by Lao Tzu. Confucius had prepared a number of questions he wished to ask of Lao Tzu concerning his doctrines. But before he could even begin on the topic, Lao Tzu questioned Confucius about his interests. Confucius replied, well, he was interested in the history of the ancients, especially as recorded in the Book of the Annals. The men, and then Lao Tzu responded, the men of whom you speak are long since dead, and their bones are turned into ashes in their graves, Lao Tzu interrupted. Now, what are you going to learn from them? They're dead. They're gone. Their talk continued with Lao Tzu asking the questions and Confucius answering them deferentially and politely. It was his belief, Confucius explained, that man is by nature good and that knowledge can keep him good. So part of Confucius' teaching is he believed in the goodness of man. Now, I don't believe in the goodness of man. I believe there's goodness and bad in man. Man has to come to have goodness from God, not from himself. He can be a good man in the world's eyes, but not be a good man in God's eyes. So he said he believed in the goodness of man and knowledge could keep him that way. And so then Lao Tzu asked him impatiently, but why do you study the ancients? Why do you try to learn from history? Confucius tried to explain his belief that new knowledge must be based upon old knowledge. See, if all you do is throw away everything you used to know, I don't need the alphabet. I don't need to know how to add, subtract, multiply, and divide. I'm now into calculus. Forget about those. Can you forget about those and continue to live? You must build new knowledge on the old knowledge. You still have to have letters to be able to understand how to read. Even though you don't sit there and practice your alphabet with any regularity, nonetheless, you have to know those letters in order to know how to read. So he said, why do you study? And he said, well, it's got to be based on old knowledge. New knowledge must be based on old knowledge. Lao Tzu interrupted him saying, put away your polite airs and your vain display, vain display of fine robes. The wise man does not display his treasure to those he does not know, and he cannot learn justice from the ancients. Why not? Asked Confucius. And the reply from Lao Tzu was, it's not bathing that makes the pigeon white. If a pigeon's white, it's not bathing that makes it that way. And he abruptly ended the interview. Lao Tzu just ended the interview, walked away. When Confucius reported the gist of his encounter to his disciples, they pressed him for his opinion of Lao Tzu. Confucius remained thoughtful for a while, and then he replied, "I know how the birds fly and how the fish swim and how animals run. And the runners may be snared and the fish may be hooked and the birds may be shot down with arrows. But there is a dragon. I cannot tell how it mounts the wind and ascends above the clouds. I have seen and talked with Lao Tzu, and I can only compare him with the dragon." And he would say no more. I met this man, and I still don't know what he's all about. So that was their encounter with Confucius and Lao Tzu. But Confucianism is quite a contrast to Taoism. Confucius has had a tremendous impact on the Chinese people. Tremendous impact. To this day, he still continues to have that tremendous impact. I have a quote here, if I can find it amidst my notes. It's entitled, "Confucius In From the Cold." The 2533rd anniversary of Confucius, this was in 84, birth of Confucius, 551 to 479 BC, has been celebrated publicly in China for the first time since the Cultural Revolution decried him in the mid-70s as a charlatan. So he was basically stamped out from 1905 on through. It was kind of stopped, his teachings. And now in the 80s, he was welcomed back. At least they were allowed to do that. And now they're back into Confucius to some extent. Here's where Confucius was born. You see the circle Khufu in China, northeastern China. You see East China Sea, you see Taiwan, you see where he was born in that area. He was both born there, he practiced there, he died there. He's got a cemetery, I'll show you that. That is a picture of what they say was Confucius in his fine robe. You see many caricatures of somebody looking like this, Confucius, known for his wisdom, known for his knowledge, known for his compassion, known for his deep ethics. And there you have another picture on the left of Confucius, and there's Lao Tzu. Confucius meet Lao Tzu. I read to you about their meeting already. Okay, Confucius was born Kung Fu Tzu, Chiu Kung, and the word Kung Fu Tzu means Confucius, the Kung the Master. So it's anglicized as Confucius. He was the youngest of 12 children. He mastered six major subjects called Ju in his schooling. So some say calligraphy and arts and different arts, and he loved all this history and a number of the major subjects that he mastered. He studied how peaceful an honest government might be. So he was really interested in how peaceful and honest government. And while we're talking about peaceful and honest, let me see if I get my book here and read to you just a couple of comments about the time in which he dwelled, what it was like. Right page here. Yeah, here we go. The almost continuous warfare of the age began in the pattern of chivalry. The chariot was its noble weapon, courtesy its code, and the acts of generosity were accorded its highest honor. Confronted with invasion, a baron would send in an act of bravado a convoy of provisions to the invading army, or to prove that his men were beyond fear or intimidation, he would send as messengers to his invader braves who would cut their throats in their presence. He would send his men out. They would stand there and go, "Am I afraid of you?" "No." And they would die. Okay. Nobody else slit their throat. They did it themselves. As in the Homeric age, warriors of opposing armies, recognizing each other, would exchange comments, haughty compliments from their chariots, drink together, and even trade weapons before doing battle. Hey, we're going to get ready to kill each other tomorrow. Would you like to try my sword? It's a little sharper than yours. Maybe if you get me first, I'll die quicker. However they did it, they chatted. There was a civility before they killed each other. Now, I don't know how you kill each other nicely. You're killing me kindly or killing me softly, whatever that song was. How do you kill somebody softly? If you kill them, you've achieved your end. I mean, you might do it in a nice way, but they're still dead, okay? By Confucius' day, however, the interminable warfare had degenerated a long way from the code of chivalrous honor toward the undiluted horror of the period of the warring states. The horror reached its height in the century following Confucius' death, but it was already beginning. The chariot, the arm of the tournament, gave way to the cavalry with its surprise attacks, sudden raids. Instead of nobly holding their prisoners for ransom, conquerors put them to death in mass executions. Soldiers were paid upon presenting the severed heads of their enemies. Whole populations, unlucky enough to be captured, were beheaded, including women and children and the aged. We read of mass slaughters of 60,000, 80,000, 82,000, and even 400,000 slaughtered. There are accounts of the conquered being thrown into boiling cauldrons and their relatives forced to drink the human soup. See, it had come to the place where it wasn't even, there was no honor. And of course, you say there's there any honor among thieves. There was no honor. In the midst of such an age, the one question that eclipsed all others was, how can we learn to live together? How can we learn to get along? Answers differed, but the question was always the same. It is the question that with the invention of the megaton hydrogen bomb, nuclear bombs, has returned to haunt contemporary man with peculiar force. At the heart of Confucianism lies in its answer to this problem of social cohesion. We need to see that problem in perspective. Confucius lived at a time when social cohesion had deteriorated to a critical point. The glue was no longer holding. And what had held up society together up till then? What had done it? And so he was out to try to find out. And he looked to the ancients. So he studied how honest and peaceful government might be. He loved tradition. He loved tradition. There's another quote about him. Let's see if I have it here. That was, I think, is really nice. They mentioned, and what I take it to be, is that Confucius was an extremely balanced person. He talked about the way he was. I can give you those six arts too. Yeah, here's the quote. It comes from Religions of Man, which I have here. Houston Smith, which I just quoted, page 163, this one is, says, there was nothing otherworldly about him. He loved to be with people, to dine out, to join in a chorus of a good song, to drink, though not to excess. His disciples reported that when at leisure, the master's manner was informal and cheerful. He was affable, yet firm, dignified, yet pleasant. His democratic attitudes have already been remarked upon. Not only was he always ready to champion the cause of the common people against the oppressive nobility of his day, but in his personal relationships, he cut scandalously across class lines and never slighted even his poorest students, even when they were unable to pay him nothing. He was kind, though capable of acid sarcasm when he felt a student needed it. Of one who had taken to criticizing his companions, Confucius observed, and he said, obviously, Tzu Kung must have become quite perfect himself to have time to spare for this, criticizing his buddies. And his answer, his comment was, as Confucius said, I do not have this much leisure. I'm still too busy trying to become the superior man to be judging others about why they aren't the superior men. It is true, he remained to the end more exacting of himself than anyone else. He said, how dare I allow myself to be taken as sage and humane? He said, it may rather be said of me, I strive to become such without satiety. Satiety, in other words, I haven't made it. I'm not filled up yet. I'm still trying. So I like Confucius. I think Confucius had a balance. He wasn't weird. He didn't go off and eat one bean a day. He could relate to people of all ages and all types. and he had a respect for those who were older than he was, and he believed in a tradition that he believed was good, and you'll see some of his basic teachings. But I thought I'd just share that with you. He loved tradition. He loved to be with people. Could break into a song. He was married at age 18. Students came from all over China to study with him. He was remarkable. And by the way, six arts that he learned were the ceremonial, which had to do with history and ceremonies, music, archery, charioteering, history, and numbers. Some say calligraphy, but working with numbers, math, and so on. So they would come from all over. From this one man, they could learn all the basic courses of education. He was remarkable for being able to cut through to the heart of the matter. When he'd have lazy students, you know what he would say to lazy students? Rotten wood cannot be carved. You can't make anything of something that's not willing and not able. So if they were lazy, he would say, rotten wood cannot be carved. Became a one-man university. It had over 3,000 students coming to him from all over China to learn from this master. He welcomed all as long as they wanted to learn. He practiced a balanced way of life and wanted to spread his concepts. He visited Lao Tzu. We mentioned that. Was not treated very well. And we talked about that account. An account has been given. Oh, Confucius believed that if he could just teach people the right way, there wouldn't be criminals. He believed that, and apparently the prisons were overflowing. And he said, the reason they're overflowing is that these people don't know any better. They don't know enough to get a good job, so they steal, and then they're thrown in prison. He believed if he could just teach people the right way, give them an education so that they had some basic skills, that they would no longer be criminals, and you had no longer need to put them in prison. He finally was given an opportunity to do this. He became the Minister of Justice in one of the provinces of China. And so he decided to institute this reform. He started teaching, educating the prisoners, and pretty soon the prisons were empty. Everything was going great until he stepped on the toes of the politicians. They said, how do we keep this up? How do we keep it? He said, first begin with you. Quit being so corrupt. Quit taking bribes. Quit making one justice for the people who are rich and those you favor, and one justice for those you don't. Start with yourselves. And because the country began to clean up, they weren't making money on the side from drug rings or prostitute rings or other areas, and they didn't like this. So they tried to corrupt him, but they knew they couldn't corrupt him because of his character. So then they began to hire people to say things against him until finally he was fired. He actually proved that if you give people some status and teach them a better way, that those people can improve their lot, they have no need to steal. He actually proved that. But because he stepped on the toes of the politicians, they got rid of him. He ended up, at the end of his life, just basically teaching people. And the only thing satisfaction he had was many of his students did become leaders after that. But those who ruled in government did not want to accept him and his teachings because he was stepping on their toes. Let me see if I can actually read you that account. It's quite interesting the way it's put it. Yeah, the case of the successful failure. Let's see if I have it. Yeah, here's what he said. They said, but where should we begin? He said, begin with yourselves. You are their legislators and judges. Do not pervert justice, having one judgment for the poor and another for the rich. First rule of your conduct should be the silver rule. Do not do anything to others that you would not want them to do to you if you were in their place. That's called the silver rule. The golden rule is positive. The silver rule is negative. Don't do something to somebody that you don't want them to do to you. Where the golden rule said, do to others as you would have them do to you, which is Jesus Christ's teaching. 2 years later, the prisons were empty. The ideas of Confucius had proven just as wise in practice as they were in theory. What had happened in Lu became known throughout the empire. The rogues and knaves who profited from crime and corruption and perversion of justice convened in secret and plotted to rid themselves of Confucius. They knew they could not corrupt the great teacher. So here his reputation was, don't even try to corrupt him. This guy has character. You can't bring him down by his personal characters. They knew they could not corrupt him, so they found a way to reach and corrupt the governor, his boss. Before long, the prisons of Lu were filled again, and Confucius went away brokenhearted. Finally, he had some menial position in one of the other governments, but nothing much. But he had proven that his ideas of good government could work. And you'll see some of this as we talk about it. He became a chief magistrate. 1 year of public service, he had done much good. Became a justice minister for an entire province, is what I'm mentioning to you. Many prisoners were given knowledge, and they kept remarkably, the prisons were emptied. Stepped on politicians' toes, he told them to stop their corruption. Politicians plotted to depose him by underhanded means. He was removed, eventually spent the rest of his life searching for meaningful contributions to society. He became an advisor to a duke until his death. So here are some of the themes that he taught. See what you think of these. These are some of the themes of Confucius. And by the way, I don't know if you were given two handouts or you're giving this one as well. This one also has a listing of all these on page 28. It says page 28. This comes from my book, so that's why it's page 28. But anyway, you'll see at the bottom of that, and that gives a story for you to read. But his first one that he taught was Li. We mentioned that before. Li is courtesy, decorum, good form, harmony. There are other definitions of Li that I typed up for you just before I came. Let me pick those up. Yeah, I'm not seeing them right now, and I won't stress over it. But you get the idea of courtesy, decorum, good form, harmony. The things should blend together and doing the right thing at the right time. The second one is Sayo, which is filial piety, a devotion of a son or a daughter. But more than that, family relationships. Very important. And there are five relationships that he mentions, five relationships that he paid attention to, and that is the ruler and his subjects. There should be a relationship there. There should be a relationship between a father and a son. Should be a relationship between a husband and a wife. Should be a good relationship between an elder and a younger brother. Should be a good relationship between a friend and a friend. So, again, proper relationships, filial piety, that we have respect for these others. Jen, human-heartedness, this means. It's proper responses to all circumstances in life. Human-heartedness, proper responses to all circumstances in life. It's a very good one. It's one that we all need to emulate and practice and follow the right type of heart. You might even say compassion would be possibly another translation of this, to have compassion for others. Yeah, here it is. I knew I had it. Concern for humanity, humaneness, perfect virtue, true humanity, the essential quality of all moral qualities of an individual. The essential quality. Why? Compassion, to be able to feel for others what they're going through. Jen. And number four, Shu, the silver rule. This is the principle of reciprocity, a moral principle comparable to the golden rule. Do not do to others what you do not want them to do to you. It's a great principle, but it's better, the golden rule. And you can talk about that and you do the what am I's. Number five is Yi, duty or obligation. Duty, obligation, righteousness, right relationships, correct form of social relations. Duty, obligation, righteousness. By here, righteousness, we mean the right thing, the right things in your relationships. Righteousness. Number six is qi, knowledge, wisdom, insight. Knowledge, learning, practice. Confucius urged students to get rid of a biased mind, to get rid of arbitrary judgments, to get rid of obstinacy, and to get rid of ego. Get rid of those so you can learn. For instance, what's wrong with the biased mind? Well, you already have your mind made up, so how can anybody convince you? Two, arbitrary judgments. You use your knowledge to do what? You become a judge of the law. We just covered that in James, and not a doer of the law. Obstinacy. You're obstinate. You're hardened to knowledge. The one is you already have a view. The other one is I don't want anything. And finally, ego. Remember what knowledge does? The Bible says knowledge puffs up. I think it's 2 Corinthians 6:1. Knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. At charity, love builds up. So he says, get rid of ego. So qi, you want to have knowledge, the learning and practice of knowledge. Number seven is chang ming, or sincerity. Sincerity means, by chang ming, you want to say what you mean and mean what you say and do what you say. Sincerity. Say what you mean what you say, and do what you say. It's talking about the sincerity of a person. Precision in the use of language is another translation of Cheng Ming. Precision in the use of language. And that's sincerity. You know, you're making sure that you're saying the right words, the right thing at the right time. What's the Bible say? What is it, like apples of gold and pictures of silver? Or is it apples of gold and pictures of silver. It looks beautiful. The right thing at the right time is like apples of gold in a picture of silver. And I never thought silver and gold went together, but I have some things that are silver on gold or gold on silver, and it looks very pretty. So, again, the right thing at the right time. And then finally, these seven lead to number eight, the Chun Tzu. The Chun Tzu, who is the superior man, incorporating all the previous values. A Chun Tzu is one who's mastered all seven of these themes and teachings of Confucius. He also had two other themes that he talks about that I didn't put on here. One is called Te, T-E. Remember we talked about the name of the writing of Lao Tzu is called the Tao De Jing, T-E, De. The Tao De Jing. It is the way, that's Tao, and its power, the De. The way and its power. Day is power and authority. And he talked about the proper use of power and authority. You'll see that in a moment, too. And then the other theme that he talked about was Wen, W-E-N. And those are the arts of peace. That how can you achieve peace? By artistic means. In other words, the various arts that produce peace. You might liken it to some of these goodwill programs or ambassadors of goodwill that go and try to bring peace by their showing. We used to have the fact that Ambassador College, when China was still not really well accepted in America, we had the troop from China, the Shanghai acrobats, came to and performed at the auditorium in Pasadena, California. And we had them on the campus there, and they were really nice. And afterwards, we got to meet some. And I remember one really good acrobat, female acrobat that my wife and I met. And we were talking to her. And of course, I mean, we were trying to talk to her because she couldn't speak our language. We couldn't speak hers much. But I wanted to give her something and just as because they were so cute and such a good job that they did. So just a wonderful job. And I had a cross pen, silver cross pen. So I gave her my silver cross pen. And she gave me a pin from China. So that we were able to exchange something with her. But it was goodwill being done. And that's what Confucius believed, that you could have goodwill by exchanging in the arts field and also by the art of deliberation and getting along instead of war. Some of the general beliefs, basic goodness of human beings. He believed that human beings had a basic goodness within them and that if that goodness can be reached, people would be better. Family reverence. Again, we talked about importance of family. Live a balanced way. Confucius believed in a balanced way. He wanted people to live in a way that was balanced and not the other, not to try to go their own direction. Man does not do good because of his environment. That's what he believed. The environment causes it. Man does not do good because his environment is corrupt. He has emphasis on morals and character development. Morals and character development. He stressed the practical side of knowledge. Why do you have knowledge? Just so you can say, I know better? Or do you use that knowledge? Again, we have practical Christianity to try to help us with practical knowledge. His sayings were collected in the Analects, which I'll try to share with you next time, some of the quotes from that as we do the What Am I's. What we'll do next class period on Friday. By the way, I'll do Friday some taking. I'm owed a couple of classes from Practical Christianity. So Friday, tomorrow, we'll finish up Practical Christianity in the afternoon. Since it is an afternoon, you'll be kind of tired in the end of the week. I'll let you do the What Am I? So you'll have a chance to get together and visit and share that information. I'll finish up this. Collection of the Analects, and they usually say, the master says this, the master says that, the master says this. Many sayings begin with the master said, mainly followed in China and among the Chinese communities. But I also pulled off the internet. It was interesting that Korea very much loves Confucius. Very much loves Confucius. And they speak highly of him because he had much to do with their educational system in Korea. So here's the conclusion. In the Orient, family and state are very important. Religious style tends to be more restrained. There's a propriety for human and divine relations. One's methods of integrating in the family and community are important. How you get along, how you interface with your family, how you interface with community are very important. Today, usually Confucian practices are intermixed with some Taoism. Chinese feel they and their land are inseparable. So they, much like the Japanese that we'll find, they feel that they and their land are inseparable. Act that you're supposed to act according to your role in life. Fathers be fathers, children be children, mothers be mothers, warriors be warriors. Act according to your role in life. And Confucius was a principled conservative who wanted to bring good order to society. And we'll see what he taught. He taught integrity. He taught sincerity. He taught that government should not be overbearing. A whole list of things that I can share with you next time. So I'll stop here. We'll pick that up next time on Friday, tomorrow afternoon, and finish up Confucianism. And we're ready to move into Shintoism on Tuesday.